This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Our guests this hour grew up together in Philadelphia. Both gravitated toward music, and older brother Michael would play around town with his younger brother Kevin tagging along. And as they grew up, they would go their separate ways to pursue different career paths, different dreams. Kevin became a successful TV and film actor, Michael a sought-after Emmy Award-winning composer of scores for film and TV. But they still have time to combine their talents, as they did as kids, now singing and playing around the country and recording 7 albums as the Bacon Brothers.
Take the house lights down the hat, it's time to hit the stage. Count it up, boys, make it loud till we're drowning. The rage, then bring it down and back it in. It's off into the dawn. Gather up your tragedies and you squeeze them in a song. Sing it with conviction that no one can deny. But if you people wonder who am I, you can check my pockets when I die. Find 36 cents and a couple of Fender. I crumpled up a piece of paper with the lyrics to this song. Just that 36 cents and a couple of Fender medium flat picks. It's all it's gonna be when I'm gone.
That's the title song from the Bacon Brothers' latest album, 36 Cents. The CD further cements what Kevin calls his and his brother's lifelong connection.
Strutted with the mummers while I danced to Mardi Gras. When I was jailed in Bogota, I tried to write the masterpiece, but I could not make it fly. No one can say I did not try. It won't be in my pockets when I die. Just at 36 cents and a couple of Fender medium flat bits. I crumbled up a piece of paper with the lyrics to this song. Just at 36 cents, that's all. And a couple of Fender medium flat picks. That's all it's gonna be when I'm gone.
Like many of their songs, 36 Cents draws on everyday experiences in their lives, and those experiences are stored on one critic described as the best CDs you've never heard. Playing multiple instruments and singing original material, they easily slip between genres, but their music is officially described as sharply executed rock with a blue-collar, rootsy edge.
With 36 cents, that's all, and a couple of Fender medium flat picks. A crumpled up piece of paper with the lyrics to this song. Just that 36 cents, that's it, and a couple of Fender medium flat picks. It's all it's gonna be when I'm gone.
Well, Kevin and Michael Bacon are in Charlotte for one night only at the McGlowan Theater here at Spirit Square tonight at 7:30, and we are delighted to have them with us for the hour. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
I see you, Mike.
Early in the morning. I'm surprised you're here this early on a Monday when your show's at 7:30. Usually the acts arrive about 5.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's good. So, you know, we're early risers, and we're happy to be here.
And obviously, you have been prepped. Have you had your bulletproof coffee? You were just talking about your bulletproof.
Yeah, don't have my bulletproof coffee because we're on the road, and you need to have a blender, and you need to have grass fed butter, and you need all this special stuff. It's too much to bring. So
your recipe is what? 2 tablespoons of butter.
Two tablespoons of butter and a tablespoon of coconut oil and hot coffee, and then you put it in a blender and you blend it up, and it's frothy deliciousness.
And I asked you where you got the recipe. It came obviously from your trainer, which means he's working you hard.
Yeah, he is. Actually, he doesn't even do it anymore, I don't think. I think he gave it up, but I stuck with it. And, you know, I like it. My cholesterol is probably off the chart, but it's okay.
You don't do this, do you?
I tried it for a while, and now if I get up in the morning, the thought of bulletproof coffee just makes me cringe, so no more for me.
That song we just played, the title song from your album, which I think is being released next month, 36
yeah.
Cents. A lot of your songs, I said, are drawn from your lives, because I read that, but you grew up in Philadelphia, and in that song you mentioned the Mummers
sure.
Parade, which is the New Year's Day tradition over there, but you also mentioned being jailed in Bogota, so how much of the song is fact? How much is fiction?
Everything else is true. Except for that one line. I never was jailed in Bogota. Never even been to Colombia, so
So who writes the songs? I know that you are a composer of music, and you've written songs, and you do write songs, but who writes most of the songs?
Well, a lot of people think because my brother is a movie star that he obviously can't write songs, but that's he writes his own songs, writes all the music, does the demos, and so we kind of whoever is singing the song has written the song is generally, and we pretty much it's pretty much split about 50-50 now.
Hmm. So when you write the songs, that means music and lyrics.
That's right. Yes, I know. Hard to believe.
No, it's not hard to believe at all.
Yes, I write the music and the lyrics, yeah.
Because looking back on what I've read about you and your brother, you grew up in Philadelphia, and you grew up with, four other siblings?
Yes, we have four older sisters.
And
yeah.
It was described as a musical family, but your father was a fairly well-known town planner. Your mother was a teacher and political activist.
Right.
Where did the music come from?
Well, truth be told, our father was tone deaf. I mean, we used to, he would sing us lullabies, and we would pretend to be asleep.
okay, Dad, that's enough.
Yeah,
sleep.
But he was a. But it was more that it was not so much that it was necessarily a musical household as it was like a very creative household. Everybody was encouraged to do something in the creative arts, whether it was dance or music or acting or costumes or painting or you know whatever it was that was really put on up on a pedestal in our house.
Hmm. Where's the Philadelphia accent? I don't hear it.
Huh?
Well, we can still do it if you want. Yeah. I'm going down to the store, get a hoagie and a Coke.
Oh, that's Philadelphia it. Is just yeah, a really, really nice town.
It's a really nice town, man, I'm telling you.
Did you have to lose it? Or did
well, you know, truth be told, I can remember my father correcting our sisters, to erase the Philadelphia accent.
Mm-hmm.
He really did. He didn't, you know, he's actually, you know, he came from a Quaker family that arrived in Philadelphia in the 1600s, but there were certain things about the city that he didn't want us to take, and that was one of the things, the accents.
I had an accent, much more so than I do now.
Yeah, I've lost mine a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he had sort of, I'm the youngest of the six, so he had kind of dropped that. I think he kind of gave up with the accent thing by the time I rolled around. So, I've seen early interviews that I've done, like that would be the only way to really hear, you know, because in a character, you know, hopefully you don't have it in the character unless you're from Philadelphia. But when I see those early interviews, it's way, way stronger than it is now. But I mean, we've both lived in New York for a really long time now. So.
But you don't have a New York accent too either.
No.
So. Now, both of you are obviously successful in your respective areas of interest, music and acting, both movies and television and theater. But you still do this act. And what kind of fascinates me is that when you leave Charlotte tonight, you're going to Rocky Mount, Virginia, and then you're going to Beaver Creek, Ohio, and then Greenville, Tennessee. This is not exactly major market, big venue stuff. Why do you do this?
No, they're not big venues.
You're not doing it for the money.
No.
Why do you do it?
It's good to play. I think it's really about having songs that you want to share with people. I think that's really what it comes down to. You know, I mean, you can play them for each other and for your families and stuff, and then sooner or later you want to just put them out there.
I mean, you got started in this music business as a teenager, and so did you, didn't you? I mean, didn't you kind of follow Michael around Philadelphia and then
I played with him. I played in other bands too.
So you could have done this, obviously. I mean, you listen to the CD, and we're going to play some songs from the CD. They are really wonderful. You listen to it, you could have done this as opposed to going into acting. So.
Mm-hmm.
And you just said...
Well, you know, I fell in love with acting, and I thought it was something that I was really good at, and from a very young age, I found it therapeutic, and my brother was doing the music thing, and, you know, I didn't want to do the same thing he was doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you still say, you just said a second ago, that you have something to say that you want to say in a song. Where does that come from?
I don't know. I mean, I think that... You kind of go through life. I've loved songs all my life. I mean, I've loved music, but I've especially loved songs, you know. And I grew up listening to a lot of music that my brother was bringing home. I also went to a lot of rock shows because my best friend was his dad was a rock and roll promoter. So when we were little kids, they would drag us around to all these, you know, monster concerts. So I kind of grew up with having my heroes were guys with guitars, you know, and that's and I wasn't really into sports, and I didn't really even go to the movies that much. My parents never took us to the movies, and they didn't we didn't really go to the theater either. So I think I had just more exposure in a way to music.
Huh. And you, Michael, have been playing since you were a kid. Obviously, you have classical training too, but you played in these bands, and you you had a I forgot the name of the band. New Day? Was that
Good News?
Good News.
Good News. Yeah,
I knew there was a new in it somewhere. Good News, which had a modicum of success, but you say that writing scores for TV and film is easier for you than writing songs. You describe writing songs as daunting.
Yeah, songwriting is, first of all, you got to write lyrics with it. And songwriting is not poetry. It's not composition. It's a strange combination of both of those things. And it's also the kind of songwriting that my brother and I do, I call confessional songwriting, where you're not sitting down in a room at 10 o'clock in the morning with cups of coffee and saying, well, I just thought of a great title, and let's write a song about it. It's more... somehow being responsive to something that happened in your life, and you just feel like expressing that and hoping that somehow you hit a chord that somebody listening to it would say, oh, I get it. I did that, or I know what you're talking about. I think that's the that's what we do better than, you know, we tried the commercial songwriting thing for years, you know, writing a hit country song, we did a song about the preppy movement when people were wearing alligators on their shirts. We did a song called Eight Wheel Boogie when the roller disco fad was happening. And I think when we put the band together, we kind of looked at each other and said, you know, these people are paying money to see us, and we have to do what we really do best. And that was 20 years ago, and I think that we've, if nothing else, we've succeeded in... This is our sixth studio CD, and we've succeeded in writing songs that when people come to... Nobody's really heard the songs when they come to see us.
Right.
I mean, 90% of the people have never heard any of our songs.
I got to tell you, when I saw the signs go up here at Spirit Square a couple of months ago that you guys were coming, I thought, the Bacon Brothers. And I walked up to the sign, and there's Kevin Bacon's picture. I'm thinking, I didn't even know he sang.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say most people are like... And that's... kind of our job to go out and, you know, if people come to hear us because they want to see what kind of socks he's wearing, we have to turn them into music fans. That's our job. And, you know, people pay a lot of money to see us, and we have a fantastic band. Paul Gazzone is with us today, our bass player, who's been with us for over 20 years. And we feel a real responsibility to make the show as good as it possibly can be.
Has it been difficult to do this for you, because you're an actor, Kevin, and you're a well-known actor, to be taken seriously, or to have people, do they come to, because they're curious about you, do you think, until they know the music and find out that it really is good, or has it been a plus or a minus for you? I guess that's the question.
I'd say it's more of an albatross than
really?
A plus, yeah. Because, I mean, I think that most people are very, very... doubtful about the idea that, you know, an actor can sing. I know that because I'm the same way. You know what I mean? When I, you know, hear about an actor putting a band together, you know, my eyes immediately start rolling. I mean, it's terrible. You know, it's terrible. And there's a lot of actors that are, you know, good.
Well, when we come back, we're going to have them sing and play, because all three of the guys brought their guitars, and we'll do that and hear some more from 36 Centuries, which is their new CD, which comes out in September. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Caregiving Corner, providing professional geriatric care management services and counseling for family caregivers to navigate the long-term care system in Charlotte and surrounding areas. CaregivingCorner.com. Well, the recent flood of children into the United States from Central America is not just affecting southwestern states. We are actually feeling the impact here. A lot of local agencies that provide immigrant services say the federal government is diverting money used to help immigrants and refugees who are already here in our area to give to the problem out in the Southwest rather than finding additional funding. And we'll take a look at what that is meaning to agencies and caregivers for immigrant services in this area tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm show, the latest on the crisis between Israel and Hamas, international reaction, negotiation efforts, and challenges of ending the conflict.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
Some bacons are famous, but not these bacons. This is Oscar Mayer turkey bacon, the less famous brother of Oscar Mayer bacon. This is Michael Bacon, the less famous bacon of the Bacon Brothers. Think about it. Both these bacons are overshadowed by their famous siblings. But when you're born into a great bacon family, bacon greatness is born into you. Michael Bacon can play 12 instruments. His current favorite is the flute. He's a composer of film and television scores. He's the only bacon to win an Emmy. Oscar Mayer turkey bacon has an Oscar in its name. Michael Bacon finished sixth in the 1975 Tennessee State Road Race and went to college at 16. He knows how to sail. He's in the Bacon Brothers band. He's naturally hardwood smoke. No, that's Oscar Mayer turkey bacon. Michael Bacon loves Twitter.
Hashtag turkey bacon. Hashtag YOLO.
Oscar Mayer turkey bacon wants you to follow Michael Bacon on Twitter. Stand up for unsung bacon everywhere. Help Michael become the most followed bacon in his family. So he can have a following of his own.
I get it.
Yeah. How's that going for you?
I've got 8,200 followers now.
That's good.
Yeah, that's not bad.
That's good. We're here with the Bacon Brothers. They're in town to play tonight at 7:30 at the McGlowan Theater. Kevin Bacon and his brother Michael Bacon. And they brought their guitars. We were told you weren't going to do this, and I'm so pleased that you did. I hope we can do justice to this. We're not set up for music, but we're going to try this anyway. What would you like to play?
We're going to play a song called Bunch of Words, which is on the last CD that we did. I guess we're playing Bunch of Words because we were just talking about songs, and the genesis of the song was a few years ago. I turned around and I realized that I couldn't remember a song that I'd written. I couldn't remember the lyrics. I couldn't remember how to play it, and it wasn't a song that we had recorded, and I really didn't have it written down anywhere. And I don't know why that just sort of flipped me out a little bit. I was kind of like, okay, and so. It's sort of about just the power of songs and how they kind of become the soundtracks of our lives. And I guess that's what I got.
Okay.
When I was a child, I heard them coming from my sister's room. And they spoke of peace, love, and war. Hate and hope and doom. I thought they would change the world and mend this broken nation. Now they feel like memories coming from the oldest station. Just a bunch of words, a simple change on a hotel napkin, red wine stain. Just a bunch of words, simple chords, soon be gone. Just a song, just my song. Monkey took my friend and beat him right into the ground. So I will sit the day they spread these ashes all around. Same one I wrote for him, but felt just like a hack. Cause I knew my pretty little ditty was never gonna bring him back. Just a bunch of words, a simple change. Ooh. On a hotel napkin, red wine stain. Just a bunch of words, some simple chords. Soon be gone.
It's just a song.
One to move us, one to soothe us, one to educate. major, happy, minor, sad, and sometimes modulate. But you know that I know this pirate in the Caribbean. All the rules. Now he stands and sings for drunken kids from New York private schools. Ask him how he keeps it up in his eyes, skin to glisten. He says it's who I am, it's what I do. On the off chance they might listen to a bunch of words, simple change on a hotel napkin, red wine stain, just a bunch of words, simple chords, soon be gone, just a song. It's just a bunch of words, simple change, happy tune, and a sad refrain. Just a bunch of words, simple chords, but they will soon be gone. Just a song, right or wrong, just my song. Got a soldier on, just a song. Got the soldier on, got a soldier on, got the soldier on. Sing my song, got the soldier on.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah.
Got the soldier on.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Got the soldier on,
soldier on.
Got the soldier on,
soldier on.
Got the soldier on, got the soldier on.
Oh yeah.
The Bacon Brothers with Paul Gazon playing guitar instead of bass on this one. Nice job. When did you when you start out playing? When young people start out playing music, they usually play a lot of covers. They play the hits from other people. When did you write your first song?
I wrote a song for Michael Jackson when I was about 12. Of course, Michael never heard the song, or it never got anywhere even within his universe. But
shall I sing you the song?
You know the song?
What is the song?
The world looks lonely through lonely eyes. The world looks sad through sad. But when dun 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 dun, and I don't feel so bad. That's it.
Yeah. You remember his song?
Oh yeah. Well, when he first started writing songs, which was at a very early age, he didn't play the guitar yet. Mm-hmm. That was yet to come. So he would sing me the lyric and the melody, and I'd put chords to it. And we actually did a demo of about 8 songs. I was going to make Kevin into the next Michael Jackson, and never happened.
But. We're same age, Michael Jackson.
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
Yeah. So you were going to be the next Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Was it going to be a Jackson 5 thing or a Jackson
2? No, I was producing. I wasn't in the band at that
Is that because
he was Svengali-ing me?
Is that because you had the moves, the dance moves too?
No, I didn't have them. But yeah, I was always like. A lot of it was heartbreak, That's always where my first songs came from.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to play a song from your new album, 36 Cents. Because we said that a lot of your songs come from your personal experience. And evidently, the Mummers Parade, which I've seen on television, but only on TV, it must be something very special. For people in Philadelphia, is it? Or is it,
it is.
Special
it
to
is
you?
Special to people in Philadelphia. You know, it's funny. If you're talking about New Year's Day, that song. It's not that special to me, really. But that song just somehow popped out. I mean, I guess we would go. Our parents would take us to the Mummers Parade, and it was, it was cool. And it's very definitely Philadelphia. But I don't really know. I hadn't really been thinking about it that much, and I hadn't been missing Philadelphia, but the song just kind of came out. I'm not really sure why.
Well, it begins with a recording of Mummers song, Odem Golden Slippers,
right.
I think is the thing there.
Yeah.
Go ahead, play it.
Right.
And then it segues into this, and it kind of brings in a lot of your longing for Philadelphia once you've left town.
Yeah, we should listen to that friend of mine. He said the work was here and the girls were fine. But all I do is wait in line to be told that I'm not right. Never should have climbed the Rockies in my lousy car. 3,000 miles to chase this star. I gotta save my money in tennis ball to get that eastbound flight. Don't wanna waste another day in LA in the land of the endless summer. Sometimes it seems these California dreams are just one long. And I was born the son of a mummer. But I'm gonna keep on, keep on waiting on the New Year's Day.
This is obviously about a time when you had not hit it big yet as an actor.
Well, it's funny because the song is... The guy goes to L.A. I never lived in L.A., so right there, it's a little bit of a stretch of the truth. I finally now have a place in L.A., but it's only in the last, like, 2 years that I got it. But it also joins a long list of kind of, like, hating L.A. tunes that we've had, you know, and which is weird because now I really love L.A., but at the time I was sort of defined by, you know, being a New York actor and not digging L.A. And sometimes you can really say, okay, I really get where this one came from. And sometimes you can't. I'm not really sure how this jumped out.
Because it's a little reminiscent of that Albert Hammond tune, It Never Rains in Southern California.
Uh-huh, yeah.
With
that's
a little
right.
Philadelphia edge to it.
Yeah, no, I've heard that. I wasn't really thinking about that song specifically. But it's funny because sometimes that happens too. Sometimes you hear a song and you go... Ooh, I really, really dig that song, and I want to write something in that vein. Last night we were at the James Taylor concert, and we were listening to one of his just, you know, incredible songs. He's got a song called Millwork, and I always love that song. And I have a song that was definitely inspired by that we used to play in the band. So that one, you know, I could definitely say mm-hmm. I wrote this with millwork in mind, but in this case, no, I wasn't thinking about the opera.
How do you become a successful movie actor and television actor if you don't live and you didn't move in the early part of your career to L.A.? How do you do it?
It was tough. I think it's tough. I mean, I would never recommend that to anybody that was starting out. I would always say go to California. That's where that's the home of the industry. It's a company town. But you know, when I started out. There was a little bit of a mystique about being a New York actor, which I don't think really exists anymore. And
because they're bringing all the TV people in to do Broadway.
Yeah, that's right.
It's the other way now.
That's right, yeah. But, you know, New York was like where, you know, my heroes were, you know, Pacino and De Niro and mm-hmm. Dustin Hoffman and Meryl Streep and all those people were like all New York actors. And so that's really what I wanted, how I wanted to define myself.
And you said that you found something therapeutic at a young age
sure.
in acting, but you've also alleged, you are also alleged to have said there are two types of actors, those who say they don't want to be famous and those who are liars.
True. I believe that.
You wanted to be famous?
Of course I did.
Has it proven to be everything you wanted and more?
I don't think that it's something that you... Well, let's put it this way. It's 99% good. People never talk about the fact that people are, like, incredibly nice to you, like, all day long. And they give you free stuff. And they say things like, I love you.
Yeah. And they mean it.
And they mean it.
Some of them. Well, the people in L.A. may not, but the but the people who are on the street who watch your stuff.
Yeah, they say. Yeah, and you know, like that's like a good thing. That being said, I don't think that until you actually have it, it's until you're like very very close to it, like the guys in the band or my brother mm-hmm. or people members of my family. it's hard to really know how bizarre it is. You know?
In what way?
Well, it's just you're always being watched, always.
And you and your wife, Kira Sedgwick, mm-hmm. are well-known. You're famous. You're successful television and film people. It must be doubly difficult or doubly bizarre.
Well, yeah. If you have two of us, then it gets even gets even weirder. So, I mean, it's life in a fishbowl, and then you go someplace where you actually are in a sort of a cocoon, and it feels different and nice and good, and then you know that the second you are going to step outside, that's going to change.
We're talking to the Bacon Brothers. They're in town tonight to play at Spirit Square on WFAE. You were in Animal House in 1978, but right after the movie, evidently, you came back to waiting tables in New York.
Sure.
You ended up doing, Guiding Light and Search for Tomorrow, two soap opera actors.
Yeah.
A lot of people do soaps for their entire career.
Mm-hmm.
You got out of it and found something else to do.
Is it just
a grind?
It's not that it's a grind. Look, I was happy to have the gig, especially because the kind of theater that I was doing was, off Broadway theater, and sometimes the rate would be $150 a week or something like that. It really was tough to live. So the soaps gave me an opportunity to pay for my rent, really, and then I could go and do theater at night. So it was really a way to do theater, but it's. A lot of people have said, "Well, that's great training for movies and television." And but I never felt that way. I felt like it was. I could feel myself getting lazy and getting.
How? You have new lines to memorize every single day.
But acting is really not about learning the lines.
Still have to know them.
You have to know them, but that's the one thing that it was good training for.
Mm-hmm.
Learning lines.
That was it. Because it's the same character every day. You don't have to stretch.
It's not that. It's that the material is so dreadful. So you're constantly trying to make some, great moment out of
nothing.
Exposition. It's mostly exposition, right? Because you're constantly catching the audience up on what they might have missed yesterday. So every speech that you have is probably 75% exposition.
Right. It's like doing noises off every day.
I guess, yeah.
Noises off the second act. It's second and third act. You're saying lines that you said in the first act, but you're saying them differently. And
right.
It's got to be screwing with your head.
Yeah, I want it out.
Okay. And we're going to come back and talk about Michael and about composing and for film. In a couple of seconds, and hear more of the Bacon Brothers and some new stuff from their 36 Cents album, which comes out in September and can be pre-ordered even now, I'm told, on Amazon. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation. Knight Foundation promotes informed and engaged communities and helps NPR advance journalism and excellence in the digital age. More at knightfoundation.org. After nearly a month of fighting and negotiations, a humanitarian ceasefire collapsed in Gaza. Diane Rehm and her guests talk about the crisis, international reaction, and what diplomats in Cairo can hope to achieve now. That's coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. And if you'd like to join our conversation with the Bacon Brothers and hear more about what they'll be playing tonight at 7:30 at the McGlowan Theater, well, now's your shot. WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks or Facebook or Twitter, and we are coming right back.
Hey, this is Ari Shapiro. As a reporter for NPR, I've learned a few things along the way. Never eat leftovers from the White House fridge. Don't park in Nina Totenberg's space. And whatever you do, never borrow money from the car talk guys. Now, here's a tip for you. You can turn your old car into the programs you love by donating it to this station. You'll get a tax break, too. Here's how.
Donate your car through Car Talk's vehicle donation program. Call 1-866-789-8627.
It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. The Bacon Brothers are playing tonight at the McLowan Theater at 7:30. I assume the tickets are still available, but I know for a fact they're here with us right now. Michael Bacon and Kevin Bacon are with us in the studio, along with their bass player, Paul Gazzone. Your path to this was different, Michael. You started with music, and you stuck with music, and you started playing around Philly, and then evidently you moved to Nashville, I'm told, and worked for a place called Combine Music. Now, I've watched the TV show Nashville from time to time, and a lot of those guys on there go to and work for these songwriting factories, I guess is what they are, where they pay you as a guitarist or a singer or a songwriter to sit there all day, every day, and write songs. Is that what that's all about?
Yeah, well Combine Music was, it's hard to think of it as a factory because they paid you, but they really didn't expect you to, they just sort of expected you to be, and that you were motivated enough so that you would go into the studio and sit down with other writers and write songs. And then they had a 24-track studio in the basement where anytime you wanted, you could hire the best players in Nashville to come over and record your demos for you.
But they didn't say you have to write 5 songs a month.
No, not at all. And I also was kind of signed more as an artist because I was also on Monument Records at the time, which was affiliated with Combine. Mm-hmm. So the idea would be I write songs and I make records, and then the records go out and become hits, and then they're publishers of the song. That's the business model.
So how did that move? How did that move you from that to writing for film?
Well, my dream was always to be a singer, songwriter, performer, recording artist. And I did that until my son was born 32 years ago. And my wife looked at me and said, okay, time to provide. And that was really actually a very formative thing when she said that to me, because that's what you have to do. You know, when you're, you know, you don't have kids, you can go out and play in schools and colleges and coffee houses and have your dream. But when you have a kid, you can't do that anymore unless you're providing. So I went into Plan B, and I was, you know, I'm a trained, quote unquote, classical composer, and I'd written film scores, and so we moved to New York, and I think another dream I had was actually becoming, you know, successful in New York, and that was, you know, that's a town that's really hard to do that in, so that dream came true. And then when Kevin and I put the band together 20 years ago, all of a sudden the original dream, Plan A, was resurrected in a funny kind of a, not exactly the way I expected to. So I consider myself a really lucky person in that I have this fantastic career where I get a chance to write for orchestra, and I have great clients, and I'm writing music all the time, which I'm dredging our childhood, really. That's my source. All the stuff that our parents provided for us creatively is like a spigot that I can turn on and off at any time.
I want to play a piece of music from a movie you scored called Downtown Express.
Oh, great.
Which featured a virtuoso violinist who actually, the actor playing the violinist was actually a virtuoso violinist.
Yeah.
Philippe Quint, and this is a song that features him and Nellie McKay, who plays a street musician in the film.
Right.
The character name was Ramona. His character name was Sasha. Not that that's important. A little piece of When I Look at You. Served as music director for this not just the composer, which meant you had to go around and figure out how to record all this stuff in some fairly difficult conditions, and you had to figure out how to work with a violinist who really was playing and could play, with a pianist who did not play, and the character could not, the actor couldn't play. And then your hands are used, because you play cello, your hands are used for the cello parts, for the close-ups.
Right.
And you're combining classical music, previously written by Tchaikovsky, people like that, with your own compositions. Was that a fun project?
Oh, it was fantastic. Very, very difficult. One of the things, I teach film scoring, and one of the things I always tell my students is you should have no tolerance when you watch a movie for poorly executed source music, meaning that somebody is playing an instrument and you're hearing something that you're not seeing. It drives me crazy. So I having a movie that's really based on real live players who are playing all over the city and having fingers matched is really important to me. And it was quite a challenge. If you decide you're going to do that to make it real,
don't.
It's tough. And most directors don't care. I mean, you'll see a car crash that cost $1 million, let's say, and then somebody picks up a violin and, you know, it's not even close to being real. So one of my pet peeves.
But how's the project like that work? Do you get the script in advance, and how do you figure out what kind of music to write?
Well, it took us 7 years to even get the thing made. And in a nutshell, the story was this classical musician falls in love with a street musician. The street musician played by Nellie Mackay, and the classical musician played by Philip Quint. So the whole story is told about their relationship. So the evolution of the story is all through the music. I wrote songs with Nelly and Philip, and I tried to make it, and actually with the band, there's a section where you see the band creating a song, and we actually did create the song in a session, and then we recreated us recreating the song. So it's a real thing where the band participated in. So, it was a wonderful experience, and a lot of work, and low budget and crazy hours, but it was great.
And you actually do play a number of different instruments. They weren't just making that up on the Oscar.
Yeah. you have done your homework. Oh my God, Mike, you're amazing.
what instruments do you play?
I don't think.
What don't you play?
Yeah, I can. It's kind of like somebody who's you throw them a ball and they can, you know, whatever kind of a ball it is, they can deal with that. And with music, I've just always played a lot of different things. So I play woodwind, I played oboe, I play cello, I play all the folk instruments. So.
Well, let's hear another tune from your forthcoming CD, 36 Cents. I believe at some point we're going to hear you playing the cello on this. Well, there you are.
Wow.
How about that? This is a song called 493 Miles, the Bacon Brothers.
She tilts the seat back and closes her eyes as I reach out and turn down the noise. Through broken sunglasses, the cabins fly past us. Did she drink long ago? Just then it's me that she's still a mystery. We've never been down this highway before. And I don't know why skies rumble. Or tumbleweeds tumble. There's one thing that I know for sure. For 493 miles, there's only two people left in this world. For the next 493 miles, it's me and that girl, just me and that girl.
Why 493 miles? Just me and why not 500 miles?
I don't know, man. I don't know, but I went around the block trying to pick that number. I just kept going, I don't know, 487, 635. I don't know. I just got to 493 somehow.
And there's a lyric in the song. You say, I've known her forever. We only just met. We'll always remember until we forget.
Right.
I love that line.
Oh, thanks.
Where did that come from?
You know, the whole song was kind of like, I don't know, sort of a empty nest kind of concept. What happened with that song, I mean, is that it's one of the few times that I've ever written off of a track. So the guys in the band put together, were sort of in the studio, and they were putting together some sort of structural ideas for a song. So they sent us this track, and I was already working on a song with the idea of this road trip and the empty nest and the two people kind of looking at each other and, you know, just saying, okay, this is a new chapter, you know.
That's interesting because I heard it as a young love.
Well, that's good. Kind of thing. You know, I mean, you hear what you hear. That's great. I mean, I'd rather have you hear it as a young love, to tell you the truth. but yeah. So, and we were in L.A. My wife and I were in L.A. and we drove out to Phoenix to meet the band for a gig out there. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of a combination of that. But I sort of had this idea for a song in my head. I also was thinking the same sort of time signature for the song, but I didn't really have the changes yet. I was just kind of tinkering around with that, and all of a sudden this track arrived, and so I just basically took that idea and sort of dumped it on top of this other musical structure that the fellas had put together.
There's another song on this forthcoming album, 36 Cents, which I think is just perfect. I'm not sure why I think it's just perfect. I listened to it like 4 or 5 times yesterday. It's richly textured. It's got everything going for it. The melody, the lyrics, the arrangement, the vocals. It tells a great story.
Pour out the coffee. Look at the times. Pick up some bread and some beer and some lies. Work on a song or finish a play. Should be a wonderful day. Check out the email, clean out the drawer, read one more story of hunger and war. Call up my father who's slipping away. Should be a wonderful day. Music and magic and mirrors and smoke. Up your glass and you hope you don't choke. Sing to the demons to keep them at bay. Should be a wonderful, wonderful day.
I'm talking to you about this. As we listen to some more of it, how did it come together? Because it's not just the song, it's the way it's put together, it's the arrangement, the scoring.
Well, it's a funny thing about that, because we were, my brother has this idea that he wanted to have a full CD. You know, I was kind of like, well, you know, that's like the old days. Why don't we just put out, you know, singles and do some videos and, you know. But he's old school in that way and felt like, you know, having a full, you know, 10 or 12 song CD was the best idea, and we really didn't have 10 or 12 songs at that point, so we had to kind of mine for some other stuff to fill it out. And I found this demo of this song that I'd done maybe, I don't know, I think it's probably 8 years old or something like that, and Mike had put a guitar part on it, and I said, what about this song? And he said, sure, and we tossed it over to a friend of ours and producer, and he just kind of worked his thing on it, you know?
Because it sounds a little Beatlesque to me.
You know? Yeah, he's a younger guy, and it was, he actually did 2 songs like that where we just sort of gave it to him. Yeah. And, you know, we did that with the band, too. We gave them, it's fun to have a song and then just see what somebody else's take is going to be on it. And I think he came up with a really great
song. The song is called Wonderful Way, Wonderful Day, by the way. All right, we have to talk about this before you go, and we're running short on time, so let's talk about this.
I'm a warrior and an assassin. I do not dance.
Really? Well, on my planet, there's a legend about people like you. It's called Footloose. And in it, a great hero named Kevin Bacon. He teaches an entire city full of people with sticks up their butts that dancing, well, it's the greatest thing there is.
Who put the sticks up their butts?
What? No, that's just a...
That is cruel.
Just a phrase.
That's a clip from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, okay.
What is this Kevin Bacon phenomenon, and how did it start? I mean, I know you're a...
It started. What do you mean, how did it start?
No, everybody refers to
1958,
Kevin...
1958 it started, baby.
But everybody refers to Kevin Bacon in these interesting ways. I mean, that's an interesting way. The 6 degrees of separation from Kevin Bacon is an interesting thing. Well, what is that all about?
I love that movie. I went, I think yesterday or 2 days ago, and the director was a big fan of his work. Had seen a movie that he did, and then ended up doing a movie with him called Super, and it was an interesting story because he Jean-Claude Van Damme was going to play the part that I played, but he fell out at the last minute. So I actually stepped in for Jean-Claude Van Damme, and I thought to myself, I got to do that. Anyway, he was nice enough when he got this Guardians of the Galaxy gig to give me a shout out, and it was cool.
You've gotten some really nice emails here, which we don't have time to share. I'll share them with them off the air about how much they liked seeing you, James Taylor, last night. And one talks about how you guys actually sing and you don't vocal fry all the time, which is what a lot of contemporary music's all about. The Bacon Brothers are playing tonight live at McGlowan Theater at 7:30. Kevin and his brother Michael. And, of course, The Following has been renewed for its third season on Fox. I'm anxious to see how much longer they can pull out this Joe Carroll thing. Thanks for the hour. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Charlotte talks with